know, the transfer portal, how it's, you know, different from back in the day. You were playing in the 90s. You didn't have the, you know, play for a few years and, you know, hit the off season and look at other options and the recruiting side of things.
No, that's exactly right. Back when I played in the 90s, obviously the transfer portal wasn't a thing. And so the school that you went to, you'd really better make sure that that you felt comfortable there from the beginning, because chances are that was going to be a 4 or 5 year decision. And if for some reason you did want to leave, then you had to sit out for a year. So it was a pretty drastic consequence if you decided that you wanted to go, or if your head coach left and a new coach came in with a different philosophy that you didn't fit into. A lot of times you were just stuck. So yeah, it's been a massive change in college football.
Then, like you point out earlier, the education side of things. Back then, where you wanted to go, the education had to be a big part of it. Nowadays, it's turning into, you know, NIL money and where you can get the best NIL deal.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think to have the transfer portal conversation, it really at some point merges into a conversation about NIL. And the two have really ended up going hand in hand. They've played such a big role in the growth of each of them individually. And yeah, the NIL, it's been interesting. I as a fan, of course, I don't like it at all. But as a former player and as a current player, I completely understand their perspective. And really, I blame the NCAA to a large degree, because they took what I believe was an unreasonable approach for so many years, where, you know, they were opposed to it in any shape, form, or fashion. And of course, you know, they had their hand forced. And so now it's kind of, you know, opened up all the doors without any regulations whatsoever. Whereas I think if maybe they had taken a little bit more of a measured approach and maybe gradually rolled it out, it could have looked much differently than it does now.
I agree with that. That's something, you know, as a player back when you were playing, that's something you wish you would probably have, some of those NIL deals. And now there's a chance that, you know, there may need to be some boundaries to where, you know, where this thing goes. It's kind of, in my perspective, it's gotten, you know, a little too far with some of these big time guys making money. And then, like you said, I don't know if you saw with Texas how, you know, their offensive linemen, some of the recruiting, if you wanted to commit, they're offering, you know, $150,000 for like an NIL deal. So it's kind of taken away some of this recruiting. They're given, you know, pitches of money, you know, to get them to come play for you.
Yeah, I think there are definitely some unfortunate or unforeseen, I should say, consequences to it all. But you know, one of the aspects of NIL that I think is definitely getting lost in the conversation, and that is just the value of an education. It's kind of like that's being completely discounted. But you know, like for a guy like me, you know, I'm a backup linebacker from Enid, Oklahoma, to have 4 years of college paid for plus my first year of law school, I really couldn't put a monetary value on the value that ended up being for me. And so I think that gets lost in the discussion, and maybe that gets minimized. We're really to the point to where I think we need to consider maybe, I don't know what the number would be, but maybe the top 30 or 50 programs, you know, kind of let them continue on in the direction that they're going, and then let the rest of those schools that no way they can compete with deals like what you mentioned with Texas. There's no way so many schools in the country can realistically compete with that for kids. And so maybe we're at a point to where those top schools break off and continue down the road that they're on. And some of those schools that don't want to or can't compete with that, maybe those are the schools that kind of stick to that pure amateurism model that the NCAA has tried to hold on to for so long.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Mike. And I was going to go to some of the players you played with. Like we touched on this earlier, but, you know, a popular guy like J.R. Conrad, who I believe right now he's part of the Lyman Mafia, I believe, with like helping with recruiting for, you know, offensive linemen around the state of Oklahoma.
Yes, absolutely. J.R. Conrad's a great guy, and he's really done provided a tremendous service to lots of high school athletes that are first and foremost just wanting to get better, both at their sport and as a lineman, but also as people. And I know that's important to JR, and you know, also helping them, those that think they want to take a next step and try and play in college football, giving them some guidance that maybe he and I didn't have whenever we were coming out. But yeah, like you said, Connor, I played at OU from 90 to 93 and really played with a lot of great players. In my recruiting class, we were still on probation in 1990. That was Gary Gibbs' first recruiting class. Yeah, that was the transition from Coach Gibbs Coach Switzer to Coach Gibbs. And so we were in Coach Gibbs' first recruiting class, and there were only 15 of us. But what we made up for we sure made up in quality what we lacked in numbers, because there were some great players in that class. You know, of course, Cale Gundy, you know, was in that class, and you know, great friend of mine, Ricky Brady, you know, a great tight end, played in the NFL, and you know, Corey Warren and Aubrey Beavers, you know, those are a few of the others that really stood out. You know, and you know, of course, you know, we had lots of other players too. You know, Corey Warren was a great wide receiver, 4-year starter for us. You know, then you had a bunch of high character guys. You know, you had a guy like Jeff Ressler, you know, was an offensive guard out of Edmund Memorial.
Yep.
Just a great guy and a great player, strongest player on the team when I was there. You know, and then my former roommate, a guy named Brian Gorka, who's spent his professional life being an educator down in Texas. So, yeah, lots of great players. But, you know, a guy that was a couple years older than me that I think gets a little bit overlooked in the discussion of great OU linebackers was a guy named Joe Bowden. I played with Joe for 2 years and got to see up close in person what a great linebacker looks like. And Joe was a consensus All-American his senior year, went on and got drafted. And I'm not even sure how long he played in the NFL, but he retired from the NFL, made a career out of it. And just watching him play every day was unbelievable.
Well, you guys just had a lot of guys just bought in, because like you said about their probation, 1 year later, like you said, 15 recruits. So you just had guys just bought into the program.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Those 15, I mean, several of us were Oklahoma guys, and all of us were ended up being Oklahoma guys by the time we were through. I mean, we were fully committed to the Sooners and wanted to play our part in building on that tradition that legacy that had been given to us by so many great players and so many great teams and coaches over the years. Yeah. So I just know that we were a bunch of guys that we took all that stuff really seriously, and that meant a lot to us.
Then we pointed out earlier about the years in 91 and 92, some of those battles against a sneaky, you know, Kansas State team who, people remember Brent Venables being a linebacker during those years, kind of a, you know, like I said earlier, a blue collar, old school linebacker who wasn't afraid to hit you. You got to see that up and personal too.
Yeah, that's right. The time that I was at OU was really kind of when Kansas State emerged from just being one of the historically worst programs in the history of college football to really the beginning of what they are now. And that really happened while I was at Oklahoma. And 2 years in 91 and 92, Coach Venables was on both of those teams that we played against them. And in 91, we played in what was an icy, cold, snowy day in Norman that I'll never forget. And we beat them pretty good that day, 28-7. But then the next year, they narrowed the gap on us, and we only beat them 16-14. And then that following year, the year that Coach Venables was a graduate assistant, that was the year that they finally broke through, and they actually beat us on another cold, windy day up in Manhattan. They beat us, and really that was really the point that I think a lot of the Kansas State fans would look back to as when they had really begun to officially turn the corner into the final stretch of that rebuilding plan that they had.
Yeah, they did have some, you know, some, like you said, sneaky years under when they had Venables at linebacker. And he kind of, that blue-collar, old-school linebacker attitude that he had, he kind of brought that to his, like we said, his coaching perspective while he was at, started a graduate assistant at Kansas State, translated that to Oklahoma, and that just kept improving at Clemson.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, as we look back, I really think that Coach Venables and the Kansas State tie to his career, I think it's really an underrated part of the story. I think it was I'd be interested to hear what he would say specifically about it. But to be a guy that went the JUCO route to Division I, that's a tough route in and of itself. To go from Garden City Junior College to Kansas State, and then from there into the coaching world as a graduate assistant, as part of what has to be considered the greatest rebuilding job in the history of college football under a guy like Bill Snyder. I'd love to hear him talk about all the things that he learned in that process.
And he really started from the ground up, like we said, you know, that JUCO route. And that's just the type of guy Venables is. He works for, you know, everything he's gotten so far. And yeah, like we expect him to do that at Oklahoma. And you feel like Venables, Oklahoma's in better hands with Venables as in Lincoln Riley.
I do. I was really pleased that you know, the Coach Venables was the top target from the very beginning, and I was even more pleased whenever he decided to come back. Because, like I said, I think he offers a perspective that very few coaches in college football can offer with his experience that he's had. I mean, he's seen what it takes to build a program from nothing. And then on the other side of that at Clemson, I mean, he knows exactly what a national championship caliber program looks like. He knows exactly what national championship caliber players and coaches and support staff and all the things that surround a big time program. He knows exactly what that looks like. And so I think you add those two perspectives together, plus his clear love for the Sooners and the Sooner Nation. I think you add all that up, Connor, and it's going to be a recipe that's going to be very, very successful.
And that's a good point from the family side of things with Venables, like Oklahoma's family to him. And that's what we saw with, you know, Bob Stoops and with Lincoln Riley. That was kind of, you know, left out a little bit. It didn't feel like he was, you know, really brought in with family. You didn't really see him like walking around in Norman. Just everything was like to himself a little bit. So yeah, with Venables coming in, that's a, you know, just a family atmosphere, and that's what Oklahoma needs right now.
Yeah, I agree. And that family atmosphere, or that idea that, you know, like the we call it the OU DNA. Yep. You know, that OU DNA, I mean, that is appealing. That is appealing to recruits, Oklahoma kids especially, but especially kids or even kids all over the country. And it doesn't take long to get on campus and to spend some time around those coaches and the players that are there to realize that all of that is not just talk, that's real.
Yeah, I think you may be, you know, a little frustrated, Mike, seeing, you know, these defenses the last few years under Grinch and back a few years before that with Mike Stoops. So with Venables coming in, you know, just based on seeing the recruiting going after guys on the not just the offensive side of the ball, but, you know, the defensive side, because, you know, we've been missing some of that defense the past few years.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have Coach Venables come in and put his stamp on the entire team, but on the defense especially. I loved watching his Clemson defenses play. I think he's obviously grown and developed as a coordinator over the years, and I think he's in a great spot now to be able to take us to that next level.